So, welcome everyone to today's lecture in compiler construction. Last time we have finished the top-down analysis chapter, so today we're going to focus on another approach to perform syntax analysis, this time instead of approaching the syntax tree from an expanding view, starting from the root node of the derivation tree. We now approach the whole thing bottom up, meaning that we focus on the actual input and try to piece together step by step partial trees that we fit together in order to at some point reach either the derivation tree or realize that we can't find any derivation tree for that particular input and then fail the acceptance of that part, piece of input. So let's have a look at what we can do for that. So the in a similar way as we had the item pushdown automaton for the top-down approach, we again introduce a general idea of how to come up with a pushdown automaton that in principle supports our understanding of how we want to perform syntax analysis, and then try to refine it step by step in a way such that we can obtain acceptable results from this approach. So the major motivation why we would ever want to come up with a different approach than the top-down approach was that, well, in the top-down approach, we had to do a lot of somewhat guesswork to come up with an idea of in which direction we want to develop our derivation at very top locations in our or high up locations in our so far expanded expanded part of the derivation tree. And this somehow feels a little bit disconnected from our actual goal, which would be the input. So the idea would be not to perform these decisions so early on in our derivation tree such at such a high level, but instead focus on the actual input and see what we can achieve by trying to puzzle out a few trees for the input that we have seen so far, and delay the decision in which direction to expand our high up nodes until the point where we have seen a large fraction of the input that actually corresponds to the yield of this part of the derivation tree. So this might help us a lot in actually deciding for the right alternative at these high up nodes. So yeah, that is the core idea, and in order to support that, the idea is to use again a push down automaton that we call the shift reduce parser that actually performs these actions by step by step consuming the input, moving pieces of the input on its push down, and as soon as it has found useful content on the top of the pushdown, try to apply a tree construction out of that based on the grammar's production, and replace the content with, in the sense of syntax, more abstract representation, particularly the left-hand side symbol of the production, and continue on as long as it finds suitable input on top of the push down until we at some point finally arrive at the root node and have consumed all the input. So to put it bluntly, the input is successively just shifted to the push down, and whenever there is a literally the right hand side of a rule of our grammar, then we replace this right hand side that we have found on the push down and replace it with the corresponding left hand side. This is called a reduction. So this also already tells you why this whole thing is called a shift reduce parser, because it shifts input symbols from the input to the push down, and on the push down all it does then is just reducing, meaning replacing right hand sides of productions with left hand sides. So let's have a look at an example of how that could work. So the for the states, of course, when we follow the intention of managing input symbols on the push down, we of course need the input symbols to be actual states of our automaton, so we find the input symbols in there. Then what we also intended to do was to perform actual reductions on there, meaning we replace right-hand sides with left-hand sides. So at some point when we put a left-hand side of a production on the pushdown, we also need the non-terminals to be valid states. So that's why you find non-terminals there. And, well, that's almost all that the whole concept demands. So the rest is just technical states that we need in order to formulate our acceptance condition and all that. So there's an artificial start and final state, like Q0 and F for final state. Yeah, so the start state is this artificial Q0, and the end state is final F. And the transitions of this automaton are the following here. So we have the transition table that you see here. And the automaton will do different things. For example, finding an A in the input, it will then shift the input symbol on top of the pushdown. We, when we find A on top of the pushdown, well, A is a valid right-hand side of a production rule, so a reduction would then replace that with its left-hand side, being uppercase A. Then, continuing on this input, for example, we would say that if we find a B, we can will then shift it. So, well, in our case, we will do it like this. We just put it on the push down. With B, we then also follow our concept of reductions, leading to uppercase B on there, and with AB on top of the pushdown, we see that this is also a right-hand side of a rule, so we replace with the corresponding left-hand side, and having just the start symbol without anything else, we say, well, if it's just the start symbol, then we go to final state, and if the input is then empty, this is all that we need for accepting the input. Okay, so in a more well, systematic way, how do we construct such a shift-reduce parser? We have already said how we come up with the states. So there's terminals, non-terminals, and two artificial things. One of those being a final state, the other one being start state and transitions, we get via, well, there's the finish transition that will accept when S is the only symbol on the pushdown except for the start state. If that is the case, then we transition into the final state. Then there's shift transactions. They look like, well, if there is an input symbol in the input, then put it on the push down, just shift it over. And then there's reduced transactions that look like, well, for any production of the in our production list of the grammar, we just add, if we find the right-hand side of such a thing on the push down, we replace it with its left-hand side. So that gives us this transition. And we just generate as many transitions as we can with this scheme. And yeah, this might not be particularly minimal, because it just has generic states on which you can just shift. You could also come up with other formalizations where you don't need to actually have a valid state there, but can work on no matter what state. Then you can just remove this queue thing and save a lot of transitions for the people who like to optimize. But yeah, just to get an understanding, this is how we motivate the shift reduce parser. For an example, let's have a look at a computation like this. I think this is the same example that we have used for the LL parsing anyway, so you should maybe remember that this AB at some point leads to acceptance for the grammar that we have had specified here. So this is the only word that you can produce with that. So let's have a look at how that turns out to work with the shift reduce parser from the page before. So all it does is it shifts and reduces. So let's have a look at what it does here. So that's just a start state. There's nothing to reduce. So let's just shift the first symbol there, creating this situation where we now find the one symbol A here that corresponds to a right-hand side, leading to reduction to its left-hand side, which is this large capital A. And for this one, well, we can't continue. There's no right-hand side that corresponds to A, so we just, again, shift over. And there we get such a thing like this, where B is again a right-hand side of a production. So we reduce and come up with capital B, which together with capital A is another right-hand side that is reducible to S. And SQ is our special purpose production that encodes the transition to the final state. So this is the final state together with the empty input string. Will
it's yours?
No, this is probably yours. I just I'll bring it back afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome. So yeah, this will terminate the shift reduce parser with accepting state. This looks fine, doesn't it? That's the way that we all would like such a parser to work, maybe. Well, let's have a look. Yeah, there's a few characteristics of that thing that we're going to see on the next slide. One is a particular one that I don't know whether you have noticed so far. So we where in this state of our machine. And we said what we would do next would be what? Reducing was the next step. Is that the only thing that we could have done? That's actually the point. So who says that we shouldn't just shift with the next input symbol and then continue our algorithm? And if you do so, well, you can continue for a while, but at some point you will end up with this Q0, A, and I think B it is, and there's just nothing in the input left, and this will get you stuck. So, is that a bad thing? Shouldn't the input be always accepted?
Yeah. I guess by definition we just need one accepting one.
So since we had a choice, this is a non-deterministic automaton, and for this it suffices to have one accepting thing. But clearly for coming up with an algorithm for practical parsing, having a non-deterministic automaton is probably not a thing that you really want. But it's fine in terms of defining what we want to have, but what we get out of that is a non-deterministic automaton. So maybe as another observation, I don't know whether you've noticed, the sequence of reductions that we have done there corresponds to this reverse rightmost derivation that was this rather exotic beast in terms of derivations that we have met a lot earlier ago when we talked about the different kinds of derivations. And I said this would correspond to this bottom-up view of the parsing, and yeah, here you see why we actually talked about this. So this shift-reduce parser and the sequence of reductions that it performs corresponds to reverse rightmost derivation. So apart from that, you might be interested in actual correctness of the whole thing, and there again the principle would be to find a correspondence between the what you can derive in terms of terminal writing from a particular non-terminal and the according computation of the shift-reduce parser, but again, for space reasons, we don't actually look into that proof. So, the other thing that we have talked about is this notion of the whole thing being a non-deterministic approach. Might not be so promising right now, but when we had a look at LL parsing, we also found that the initial idea of how to perform LL parsing was highly non-deterministic. As soon as you start with some alternative in your grammar, then you already have a non-deterministic automaton. If you have just the pure item pushdown automaton. So in order to come up with an actual parsing algorithm, we can do a similar thing as we have done for LL parsing, namely trying to find some way of supporting the decision-making process of our shift-reduce parser by guiding him with some additional information. And this is what the LR parsing is all about. So there's different ways of enhancing this very basic shift-reduce parser with little helpers that guide the decision process whether to perform another shift or whether to actually perform a reduction of a complete right-hand side on top of the pushdown. So in order to maybe find some motivation for how to guide these the shift reduced parser. Let's have a look, maybe a little bit more in detail, on the shift reduce parser. This does not actually really look like the most recent version of the slides. Okay, just a small, just a moment. That might be why. So, a little bit of patience, please. It's a real nightmare to have these more than 100-page presentations in Beamer, but what can you do? Yeah, so this is more like the most recent version of the thing. So I found the whole system, the whole example, to be not so comprehensible without the actual grammar at the bottom of the page. So. The example that I want to look at is the arithmetic expressions example, and this is the grammar for that, together with the enumeration of alternatives. So let's have a look at how that works for a particular input, and I have also put on the slide the actual derivation tree of a reverse rightmost derivation for this grammar, and with that you can we can try to see what part of the derivation tree has already been reconstructed by the shift reduce parser, so we can get an intuition of where we stand in terms of progress in the whole thing, and what that means for the machine state in terms of input and the push down. So let's have a look. We start with the Q0 and the input that you see there with this counter times 2 plus 40. So first of all, 40 is consumed to be name, and this starts the reconstruction by replacing the name with its left-hand side. There's just no alternative to that, so we do this name thing leading to an F. And having solely an F on the push down is also without alternatives. We just have to go to alternative one for of production of t, so we do that. And for t, then what we do is we consume another star, we consume another int, change that to f, go over to reduce to t, reduce to E, push another P, consume another integer, transform it into a T, and then go the E plus T right-hand side to produce an E. So this would lead to a successful acceptance of the input. So what were the spots where we were actually questioning our decisions? So, for example, this one over here. This is the part where we have already reconstructed the name part into a T. We have consumed the multiplication operator, and we have reconstructed out of the int an F. So the question would be now whether to reduce again with F. Or whether to, from the F, we could just directly generate T via this one alternative. Or we can merge it together with T times F, thus reduce with this one over here. And there's also, I think, another spot where we have done a completely other decision. For example, this one here, where we from F we then went to T. So what can we see as a motivation for doing either of those? Well, we would want to make decisions that help us in actually really reaching the root node of our grammar. In our case, it's this E thing over here at some point. So for us, it would be really important that there exists some reverse or rightmost derivation that actually really leads to this part of the state of reconstruction that we have done so far. And the way that we can connect those would be to actually really try to top down again, try to approach the so far resulted reconstruction bits from that we reconstructed bottom up, and to kind of approach it from the top down part. And if they fit together, then we would say, well, with the information that we get from our approach top down, we can maybe help in determining what to do at that place, whether we could reach it by performing the reduction, or whether we have seen that there's no valid way that we can approach our state from the top by performing a reduction. In that case, we would then do a shift. So, this makes us maybe a little bit clearer that there's a connection between the path that we go by expanding our route and the actual content of the pushdown that we consider to be so far reconstructed parts of the derivation tree. So, in general, we consider in a successful derivation tree these parts in yellow, parts that we have so far already reconstructed, and then there's a sequence starting from the start symbol of derivations that fits to these parts of or that should fit to our so far reconstructed parts in order for the whole system to come up with a successful derivation. And in such a case where a particular prefix that we find on the push down, so that's the typical content that we have reconstructed, would be considered viable for a particular reduction if there exists an actual derivation from the root node that reaches the symbol to which we want to reduce. such that everything that is expanded on the way to reach such a P fits to the content that we manage on our push down, and so this is then we would call the push down viable for that particular complete item. What we are actually more interested in is viewing it the other way around, particularly finding admissible items for a particular input. So if for a particular pushdown content. So we would like some way to associate our pushdown content with a particular item that we consider that we somehow find a way just to tell us that this is admissible for the current pushdown. I think I have gotten that. Yeah, should be okay. So for that, the idea would be to collect all the possible the possible admissible items for particular pushdown contents, and consider the pushdown contents as things that can develop over time, changing the collections of admissible items. So that we, in that sense, we can use the content of the pushdown as input for an automaton that, while consuming each of the symbols of the pushdown, would somehow change the internal state of the automaton that would create a different idea of which items are considered admissible for that particular input. And if we just let this automaton run on the complete pushdown, we would come up with the actual admissible item that we can consider ourselves to be most useful for or most appropriate for our current configuration, and then use that to guide whether we should reduce or shift by just looking at this admissible item, whether this is a complete item, an item that has a marker on the right-hand side or not. So in order to do that, we can then make use of this observation that we have had, that we get an idea of whether an item is admissible by looking at the path of the expansions that we can do, starting from the root symbol, and the path is characterized by the symbols that we find on the push down. And each symbol that we find on the push down corresponds to a part that has already been matched with the input. Thus, this would mean that in the current syntax form that we consider ourselves to be in, we would place we would mark that part as already matched with the input, and would, in that sense, continue to try to expand further to the right within the current syntax form. This then leads to an automaton construction that you see here. So we, what we do is we consider an automaton whose states are items of the grammar, and we start at the root production, this S prime, with its right-hand side not being matched with the input so far, so the marker is before the S, and the other states are just other items of the grammar. and the final states are the ones where the input is already matched completely with the right-hand side, so the marker is to the right. The transitions in these in this automaton would look like, well, we would consume either terminals or non-terminals, whatever we find on the push down, and we would consume that if we are in the state where the marker is in front of such a symbol, and by consuming it we would move the marker one to the right. And this, we would do transitions for all the possible rules that we find in our grammar. And apart from that, the other ones would be, well, if our marker is in front of a non-terminal, we would expand that in order to match with the right-hand side of an alternative for this non-terminal. So, yeah, this would correspond to the step that descends a little bit. Yeah.
Do we not need to still have beta on the stack?
Interestingly, this is not a pushdown automaton anymore. So this is a final automaton. So yeah, to maybe get the picture a little bit corrected here, we have now a situation where we have two automata running in parallel. So one is the shift reduce parser. This is the one that has the push down, that has the symbols either from the input or from reductions on its push down, and it needs guidance. The guidance it gets by having another automaton, this time a final automaton, run on its push down. The push down of the shift reduce parser gives you an idea of what it has reconstructed so far, and this, what we call a characteristic automaton, this final automaton, scans this thing, and while running on the content of the push down, changes its idea of how far in the reconstruction we could find ourselves in if we go derivation steps from top to bottom and find these particular pieces of content on the push down. And it uses these inputs to advance in the internal state, and that is what these transitions do. So this is a very mechanic way of coming up with an automaton. You just take all the productions of a grammar and first introduce transitions of this form orange 1. This will just create these linear things that connect states by moving the marker a little bit around. So, for example, let's focus on this fellow over here. So this starts with the with the rule from over here, e goes to e plus t, and in the beginning the marker is on the left hand side, and then since the marker is in front of e, we go a transition consuming e, reaching this one where the marker is in front of a plus, so we reach this one where the marker is in front of a t, so we can go a t transition until we reach an egg thing. This corresponds in an analysis of a pushdown where there, where you would already find, for example, an E on there, a plus on there, and a T on there. This would lead us to interpret that a situation where coming from top down, we would already find the E being produced, and the plus being found on the input, and the T being found on the input, so we would not have to derive that anymore, but we can go a little bit on the same level and reduce further to the right. Well, to the right. The other option that we have to keep in mind is that we can also, instead of just find a particular part already on the pushdown, be not in that situation, but instead having to still expand. And, these is, are the transitions that are labeled with this orange 2, and they lead to connections like this, where you connect each time when in such a state the marker is in front of a non-terminal, you connect this item with an item that expands particularly this non-terminal. So here the marker, for example, is in front of the E, so we need to connect that to all items that deal with alternatives how to expand E, and yeah, we were in the state of not having matched E so far, so the marker also is kept on the left-hand side of the right-hand side. Yeah, so by these two transitions, we get a final automaton. It's non-deterministic at first, but there is ways for us to produce a deterministic automaton for that by just plain power set construction. So this is what gives you an automaton that looks like this. Or alternatively, you could try to directly come up with such an automaton by not at first creating one automaton and do the power set construction, but instead rather do a direct construction. And that is what you usually do in the LR0 to LR whatever automata. So this is how the direct construction works. So the original entry point into this characteristic automaton that should guide our shift reduce automaton would start with this special production S prime goes to whatever the start symbol of the grammar in question is. So that's what we also start with at first. And then we directly apply our power set construction right now on this automaton. This would mean that we would have to follow all the epsilon transitions of the automata in the characteristic automaton, and well, this means just that we have to also put all the items into this state that we get by looking at the marker and seeing that the marker is in front of a non-terminal. So in our case, this would have been E that we need to expand, so this is why we added those two items to the thing. Here, there's another mark in front of the E, but, well, the E's we already have covered, so let's have a look at the next one. There's a mark in front of non-terminal T, so we also add the T productions in there. There we find the marker in front of an F, so we put the F productions in there. The marker again in front of a T, but now T is already added. Here the marker is in front of a terminal, but a terminal can't be expanded anymore. So this is the point where this expansion stops at some point. Either you cover the whole set of rules, or you reach a situation where the marker is in front of a terminal symbol or even at the end of a right-hand side. And here, for this one, int is also a terminal. So this is good now. So with that, we have done the epsilon transitions already in that step. So what now remains to do is to do these other transitions where we consume input. And what can we consume? Anything that is yet to be marked. So, for example, we could say that we might reach some other state by consuming E. This would mean that those two for those two productions we can do valid tracking of progress. For all the others, this does not lead to any progress. So let's have a look how this looks like. This would mean that we would now have E already completed here, and in the other part we have E goes to E bullet and plus T. So these are the productions that the items that we can reach by just consuming an E, which would just shift the bullet by one. And now we have to think of the epsilon closure again. We do the power set construction already within this, so we have to keep attention to that. But here it turns out the bullet is already at the end, and here's the bullet in front of a terminal, so there is no such thing as a power set that unfolds here. We can terminate with the state and then, for example, track what we can reach with, for example, going this T, this plus thing. So this will then reach another state, which is starting like this. E goes to E plus the bullet there, front of T, and now we have the bullet marking another non-terminal again, so we have to unfold everything that we can do with T, which is bullet F, or T goes to bullet T times F, and again the bullet marked an F, so we also put the F productions in there, which is this thing and this thing, and so on. We have to take care of all the others that are possible to go. So like F we have to take care of, T we have to take care of, the open bracket, int, and same goes for here. So there's a lot of transitions that are possible from these states. So I have done this tedious part of work already for you with an animation here. So this also highlights all the markers that have been already transferred into transitions on the automaton. And if you happen to come into a situation, for example, where you have to create such an automaton, I would highly advise when trying to go these steps to also do this kind of special markers, which parts of the transitions of the state you have already translated into automaton components. So you usually mark the bullet that you have used for creating another state. And this thing, for example, has led to this particular bullet to advance by one to the right, and this reached another non-terminal, which spawned a whole lot of other items to be included in that thing. So, with that, this is the closure for this queue, in this case 5. Let's have a look at what else can be done. For example, you could do this T part here, which would lead to a transition with T. And those two, these are the ones that we have seen, I think. Was it? Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And it happens that in this automaton over here, we can do a similar transition
because we can also consume tea, and it happens that we reach a state that matches one that we have already transitioned from this Q0, so we just reuse that and put the transition to this one. Whenever the marker is at the end of a particular item, then this cannot be cannot lead to any transition anymore, so we can also mark this off as being already treated. Then we can choose another transition from Q0, maybe it's the E that comes next. Yes, it is. This will lead to this particular state, which is also quite nice because it has a completed item in there. What else can we do? Maybe an F. Yeah, so the F will reach this thing here, which is also good because it closes another item. Same goes for int, and with that we have covered all the possible transitions via all these markers here. And yeah, those two are complete. We don't have to look at them anymore, but instead we can look at the others. For example, here we have the plus was marked, so this is one transition that we can go. And this opens up a new transition, and so on and so on. So this will uncover step by step a whole lot of other states until at some point it stabilizes. And the automaton that you get out of that then is one that is deterministic. There's only one transition for each symbol that you might find on the pushdown. And yeah, so that is should also correspond to whatever this power set construction would have given us. So this is the direct way of doing that. Okay. So far, this looks... I don't know, is that a difficult thing? Would you be able to do that yourself? If not, this is the time to ask what you need to know for performing this construction. So what is important is that you, each time that you open up a new state, you have to pay attention to the marker. If it is in front of a non-terminal, you expand that and you do that recursively until you stabilize that particular state. And then you have to keep track of whether you have followed all the transitions that go out from that state by also marking the dot in there. And apart from that, the only thing that you have to keep in mind is that if there is states that already are there, you conceptually merge them into one or just put the transition to the one that is already there. And yeah, that is all that you have to do for this LR0 automaton construction. This automaton... Now, yeah, this is the formal way of expressing how this construction works. So instead of simple items, now we work on sets of items as states for the automaton. The start state is obtained via the start production. S prime goes to marker S, and then respecting all the possible expansions that you can do with the from the start symbol. And yeah, what does that mean? You have to look at the symbol that is marked with a bullet and then check all the possible all the possible well, this is not the one that I wanted to highlight. All the possible rules that you can reach by expanding this B prime
This is what is given to you by this thing here. And all of those you have to incorporate into the epsilon closure applied version of the state. In practice, you have seen how that looks like. You step by step expand until you can't expand anymore. So this is how you obtain states. A final state, when is a state final, since this comes from this power set construction, it also takes the same condition for a final state. It suffices when there is one completed item in there. So if there is just one item in a state a closed item, then the whole state is considered to be a final state. How do we do the transitions? Transitions are happening under arbitrary symbols by just taking those items into the new state that had the marker in front of the symbol with which we want to transition, and then again perform the epsilon closure, so expand until we can't expand anymore. So that is how you have to read this kind of formal definition of how this LR0 automaton looks like. So with that thing, now we get a final automaton. How does that help us? Well, we said that the idea would be to use this automaton to interpret the content of the push down of a shift reduce parser, and if we reach a final state at the end of the push down content, then we can look into the state of this LR0 automaton and look up how the closed item looks like, because that is corresponding to exactly the reduction that we have to perform on the shift reduce parser. So this is usually how you would make the shift-reduce parser work. However, that would also mean that in each step of the automaton, what you would do is you would restart on the state of the machine and restart with a new LR0 automaton and reread the complete pushdown, just in order to get a guidance whether to do shifting or reducing. And when you've gotten your advice, you do another step, and then you again rescan your pushdown content, do another step, rescan. And since for each of these rescans you have to read the complete sequence of symbols that is on the pushdown, this is quite a tedious thing. And you might wonder whether you can do better than that. And actually, yeah, you really can. It's not necessary to reinterpret everything from scratch, because the only thing that really changes is only the top of the pushdown, which is corresponding to the right-hand side of some production. And everything else remains the same. So you might wonder whether you could instead somehow cache your progress that you have done while reading the push down in some meaningful way, so that you can reuse this cached value to give advice for the next step of the shift reduce parser. And indeed, you can do so. And the way to do so is to actually keep track of keep track of the path that you have taken in the LR0 automaton, and only
interpret so what you do is you put all the states that you have passed in this automaton on the pushdown, and then in each step of the item the original item in the original shift reduce parser, you would look at the top of the pushdown. In case there's a final state on there, you would conceptually trigger a reduce action and replace the top of the stack with by kind of backtracking in your LR0 automaton by taking away the topmost stack cells that correspond in the things that consumed a right-hand side of a function, replaced it with a different way in the LR0 automaton. How does that... is there... Oh, there's no practical... You could maybe try to do that here as an example so that it's not out of thin air. So let's have as an example input something like int plus int, for example. So this would lead to with this optimized version of the shift reduce parser, which is then the LR0 parser, this would consume from the input the int thing, and it starts always from Q0, of course. Then it would consume the int thing, which would lead to the automaton going to Q4. So we have to push Q4 and consume int, and now we have on top of the pushdown Q4, which is a final state. Final state always means that we now have to conceptually reduce, and instead of reducing, what we do is we undo this last step and say, well, conceptually we go back instead of and we reduce this int with f, and instead go with f from here. So instead we will then go from Q0 with f, which will then reach Q3, and Q3 again is a final state, which means that this would also mean a reduction. Reduction means that we undo again, and instead of going F, we then go with what has been there, which is a T. So we again undo the thing and go T from what lies beneath, and this is this Q0. This reaches Q2. So, and in Q2, we then have the we would probably like to go the E version. Yeah, so there's a final this is a final state with a complete item that looks like this. That's, that says that we have to reduce with T goes to E, E goes to T, so we undo content of the push down and instead go to E, which is Q1. And here we could either end up reducing or shifting with this plus, and plus is what we find in the input. So what we do is we then continue with going this way, pushing to Q6 it is. Q6.
6, and there we can consume either, we can consume int, for example, which is the next thing from the input. So we go to this one here, Q4. And now we can't consume anything anymore. Instead, we then start reducing again. Going the F branch, which would reach Q3 first, which is then again a complete item. So we go back there and go to T, which is Q9. And this one then has this completed item, and this means to reduce with now, we've done 3 symbols to reach this closed item, so we also need to remove 3 of these things again. And so that is what we do, and instead we replace them with the state from over here, and now we accept. So you have seen me do some dubious stuff here, particularly in the states where we had several possible choices. Here, for example, we could either... this is maybe an even more dubious thing. This one here, for example. We could either do, say, we reduce, or, we still have possibilities for shifting, for example, with this multiplication operator. And indeed, this is a problem. The final states of this LR0 automaton that we would so dearly like to use to decide whether to reduce or to shift, in some states are not giving us unique advice, but instead give us 2 options what to do. For example, in this Q1, you might either reduce or shift due to either having a complete item or an item where the bullet is in the middle. Same goes for this one and this one. The other ones, those are pretty easy to decide. They already have only 1 item anymore, and this is a complete item, so for those, it's pretty easy, they always say reduce. But the others give non-deterministic advice only. So that's maybe not what we wanted to have from this whole thing. So what can we do about that? That is an intermediate slide that should have probably been a little bit earlier. So this is giving you how the LR0 parser looks like from a formal point of view. Maybe focus on that a little bit later on. And let's continue with this thing that we have discovered right now. So we have discovered that we have non-deterministic automaton possibly, particularly when we have states where there's either 2 complete items included, or a complete item and an item with a marker in front of a terminal. Those are states that are not suited for LR0 parsing, and if we encounter that, then we don't have an effective approach to parsing, at least with LR0. Okay, so much about these conflicts. But if you don't have these conflicts, then this is kind of the construction that you would go for. So the transitions in your automaton would look like, you would do a shift,
if the so from top of the stack containing P to containing PQ, when you can go in the LR0 automaton from P to Q consuming A, you would have a reduce transition looking the following way. Here you would emanate from push down, top of the push down that starts with some P and then states Q1 to QM, and you would take away all this Q1 to QM and replace them with another Q if this QM here, this one, is a final state. It's a final state when it contains an item that is closed or has the bullet on the very right-hand side. And in these cases, you take away as many states as you had symbols on the right-hand side of the closed item and replace them with whatever you can reach from the underlying state by consuming what has been the left-hand side of the closed item. So you look at the transition that your LR0 automaton can do in that situation and take the cue out of that that you put anew on the pushdown. And this is what this kind of backtracking mechanism of the LR0 parser does. So whenever we have matched a particular part of the input successfully with our progress in the LR0 automaton, we take away all the intermediate steps that we had to go through while checking whether the input corresponds to what we expected, and replace it with progress on one level higher than before, because we can then decide that everything that was necessary in order to match with whatever A needed was successful, so we have matched with A. Okay, and as a finish transition, what we introduce is, well, if the state on top of the push down just on top of Q0 is that particular one with our special production S prime goes to S, and if that is a closed thing, then we transition into the final state. Okay, so yeah, now with the problem in mind that we have these reduce conflicts and shift reduce conflicts still open, you might wonder what can we do in order to get rid of such conflicts. And well, actually, there is ways of doing that. You might have wondered what this little number in this LR0 parser construct is for. And this is referring to a similar concept as we had for this LL. This is referring to look ahead. The idea would be now to use whatever we find in the input of in our current configuration to guide us in resolving these reduce or shift reduce conflicts. So back to the model which had motivated us in coming up with this automaton at first. The situation where we don't know whether to shift or reduce can, for example, be seen here in this step of the computation. So for T, we can, which is in which is, for example, either here or here in our right-hand sides of productions. We are somehow torn between either we want to
reduce that to E. Or we might say, well, let's wait a little bit. Maybe we can combine it with a multiplication operator and an F, and then later on reduce it to a T. So these are the two options that we have. So the question is now, how can we even more guide our shift-reduce parser than just by looking at the pushdown itself? Well, I said it already, there's this concept of look ahead, so we might also consider whatever we find as the next symbol in the input, or the first symbol of the input that remains. And well, can that really help? Well, particularly here in that case, when we have the multiplication operator, we might say, well, we already have a T, and then there's directly following a multiplication operator, so this already gives us this symbol and this symbol, so maybe it's a good idea to shift here and not perform a reduce action. So we would get rid of that variant and make a commit to this thing and try to continue parsing that way. Other situation. Here we again have a T. We might be tempted to, well, either reduce to E or to continue in order to come up with multiplication here. And here it turns out in the input we have a plus symbol. Plus symbol is, well, already somehow clearly not what would be following a T in this variant here. But does it fit to the other one? Well, you can't say here at that part whether that is possible, but if you do the reduction, then you rewrite that to an E, and an E, for example, can occur directly in front of a plus. So, with enough pre-computations and preparations, we might be able to come up with a decision helper for whether we should do reductions or shifts based on the next input symbol. And what we would need to provide is some understanding of the first symbol that follows the situation which I consider to be myself in. And so nice in here. So yeah, the right context is what matters for resolving these conflict types of things. So this leads us to a particular view on grammars, productions, and whether we can cope with them by taking into account a limited window of look ahead into the remaining input. And yeah, again, we can define a class of grammars that is suited for parsing in a parser that follows the LR principle and looks at this at k many symbols in the input for guidance. So in order to be able to do that, you need the following situation. In case that you can derive in a certain way from the start symbol and obtain some syntax form alpha beta with the last step having been A goes to beta. So these two belong together, and so this beta is just kind of for you a way to see what the last step has been in this derivation chain. So if you look at what you get along the way of performing these derivation steps, and then consider k many more symbols
the input that you can take away from this thing, then there needs to be no other derivation that by just looking at the same amount of symbols that looks exactly the same but has been constructed with a different A prime and beta prime as the last step. So if there's no two different ways to reach the same configuration of your machine with particular input symbols, then this grammar is actually suited for parsing with just looking at the first k look-ahead symbols of the input. So this we can use in order to classify grammars, whether they are suitable for a particular K, for LRK parsing. And we do so by just looking at, by looking at rightmost derivations and start enumerating all of them. And for each one, we check whether when we take this combination of alpha beta as current derivation to check, whether there is some other derivation that if we look at the same amount of symbols than we do for this one plus the look ahead. And if these prefixes are actually the same, then we have found a contradiction for the grammar being compliant to LR of that particular K, and we repeat the process by with a larger window for K and for the look ahead. And if we find that we cannot fix a particular K such that we can differentiate different derivations, then, the grammar is not LRK at all. So, let's have a look at examples. So, we are now interested in whether this is an LRK grammar, and if so, what is the minimal K such that I can parse that with an LRK parser. So first of all, just as a funny side remark, this is a grammar that is not LLK for any K. But let's have a look at that, whether that is LRK now. For that, we need to enumerate all the possible derivations that we can do with that thing. So what would be derivations of this? Well, there might be, for example, A might be a derivation. For A to be reachable from S, we would have to replace S with A, so A had been the last part that had been replaced, so this A would correspond to a beta. For alpha, there's just the empty string, so it would match nothing. Okay, so this is one derivation that is possible. I keep that because I have to compare it to other derivations that are possible. So what are other ones? Well, in the same manner as I can derive A, I can derive B and underline the last bit that I have replaced, so this has been B. Okay, so far we can now start testing for derivations of the length like this, which is length 1, whether they are prefixes of each other, and well, B has the same length as this one, but they are not prefixes of each other, so this would not be a contradiction for even LR0. So far we say that this thing is LR0.
Good, let's continue with other derivations that this thing has. So we derive further, for example, with A, we can derive AB, still underlining this, or AABB by deriving again with the same variant, this time from this A, and the last part that I have expanded was this one, and this can be AABBB, this one. And you see, all I get out of that path would be derivations of the form where I have as many A's as B's, and in the middle this ABN. So for that part, I have to look at this alpha beta part. This one matches alpha, this one matches beta. So I have to compare with anything of the same size, well, or lower, and check whether they somehow are prefixes of each other. And, well, there's no common prefix for either of them. So far, no contradiction. What else can I derive? Well, instead of going to the first alternative, I can expand to this zero thing, so this will be just A to the power of n 0, B to the power of n, and this is the last thing that has been replaced in this one, and for that again, this one has the same length, but you see already that part here is breaking the prefix condition between those two. This one is A to the power of n 0, and this one is A to the power of n A, so they already differ here without even having to take into account any look ahead. So, still no contradiction. What else can I do? Well, I can then also go that route here. So this goes to A B square, and can do that repeatedly, so I can end up with these. This one overlaps with, in terms of length, with this one and this one, but as soon as I reach the beta part, I get different symbol there, so there's no contradiction in those. And the final thing that I can do is AN1B2N, and again, this is the last replaced part, and there's no prefix matching with that. So, all in all, those are the possible things. I think here in this form that you have here, I didn't even put anything that follows this better here, because I shouldn't really pay attention to that as long as I'm considering everything for LR0, and yeah, well, there's no contradiction. So these have been all the possible derivations for that grammar, and neither of them are substrings of the other, so yeah, there's no contradiction for LR0. Let's continue with another one. There you can also enumerate all the possible things, which will lead to this one here. And for this one, well, is there any prefixing each other? No. So there's still LR0. Next one. Maybe this one now gives us a little bit more to do. So let's do
again the derivations, but this time, since there's different text, this already indicates that LR0 won't be enough. And exactly that is the case. We, when we do derivations, we will at some point come up with derivations like this one, where we derive a b to the power of 2n, then another b and a c, and going a slightly different route, and in the last step, not replacing with b but with bba, we get to this derivation. And here we see what we needed to watch closely was the parts that range from alpha to beta, which would be this part here, and we find the exactly same sequence as a prefix of another derivation. What follows is for now not important. So since this one is a prefix of the other one, this is now violating the condition for the whole thing being compliant to LR0 parsing. So our candidates for the K0 is out of the question. So can we do parsing with LR1? If we try out for LR1, we can look at one symbol more from the input, and this would be that symbol here. And now we see, with just a look ahead of one more, these two cases become differentiable from each other. So with LR1, those two are not violating any LRK condition anymore, and yeah, so the, with that we can continue, and this one doesn't interfere anymore, so the whole thing is LR1. So just to complete everything, the last one, there we if we do Rytmus derivations, we can obtain derivations of this form here. And yeah, here we get the interesting situation that now we can not find any suitable k anymore to decide whether this derivation is different from, for example, a to b n plus 1 b n plus 1 c anymore, because, well, this n can be arbitrarily large, the but we have to only we have only a finite number of input symbols to check whether those two things correspond to each other or not, whether those two things overlap or not. And well, we can just pump up this n such that it exceeds every finite look ahead window. So this is an example for a grammar which is not even LRK. Okay, and with that, I think I want to terminate today's lecture. We will have a look at how to come up with actual LRK parsers next time. So have a nice 2 weeks, I guess, and see you in 2 weeks.